Well, good morning. Welcome. Hey, Alan. How are you?
Yeah.
Well, there are three of us present. Here we are. We made it in. Raymond, Ray Graff, thank you very much for doing the intro. I missed my cue by about a minute and 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's fine. You were fine. That's pretty much normal.
Yeah.
How did that big old Cadillac work this morning, Ray?
Just fine, sir. Just fine. In those areas that were plowed, it was fine. There were times when it was a little sketchy. You know, I've only regretted being in this business maybe five times in 27 years, and four of them were today. It's amazing. Yeah. Yep.
It was, I have to say, you know, the being without power was a nice, that was a nice addition. That was a bonus.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Am I jealous of you?
Yeah. That was fun. And
am I jealous of you? Because, Joe,
yeah,
we have a big fight at the Shartok house, and that has to do with the generator that I bought.
Oh, and it works.
And it works in tests. It's never been tested. And Roselle's whole point was always, you've never had a power outage for more than an hour, so what are you talking about? And we went and spent the money, and now Joe gets to justify the whole issue, yeah, and I do not here.
Oh.
I'm left holding the bag.
Okay. Well, that's true. You know, if... Well, now I know who to borrow a generator from.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you can't move this thing. I don't think it'll fit in Alan's Prius.
No.
No, this is a big generator. Yeah.
So, oh, okay. You know, these storm totals, our Dave Gustina gave me the storm totals. 27 inches of snow in South Bern today, you know, as of the total storm.
Wow.
27.
Wow.
What was the, was there anything from the North Country?
The North Country, the closest I have to you is Middle Grove, which is Saratoga County, 12.5.
We got more than
Warrensburg
that.
Had 9. I had at least 7 feet at my house.
Yeah, we had at least 2 or 3 feet of the
it
house.
Was incredible. It was,
my guess would be around 20, 24.
The worst part, of it was, got home at 5 yesterday. Everything was clear. We cleared everything up. Car was cleared off. Maybe just a tiny dusting until the time we went to bed at 11. So I said, okay, kids, you've all studied. You're going to school today. We are, you know, it's going to be an easy day. 6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it must have just snowed at a midnight to 6.
And at some point, three inches an hour is what they said.
Astonishing.
Yeah. Well, you were up all night, right, Alan? You can tell us what it did
well,
overnight.
I did get up to take a peek every once in a while.
Take a peek. I see.
Nice.
I'm glad you added the K. Good
That's
job.
What you did there.
Yeah, K. No, I meant it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm compulsive about that kind of thing to see what's happening and you know, there are times you hear the truck come by and clear it out.
And you think
when
you're
I was
saved.
Out working Murray last night, you know, it was slow and the trucks were there. But this morning, whoa, is it piled up.
Yeah.
Whoa.
We should be used to this now. We live in the Northeast, right? No big deal.
Well, don't you think that's the whole point? My wife and I were talking about this on the way down because, you know, we had a couple hours to talk.
Sure.
We expect... You're exactly what you said. We expect this in the Northeast, although the last several years we haven't had this. This is like the first really good storm we've had in almost a decade, I think.
Well, but I think it was just the timing. I mean, a lot of us went to bed and thought it was over.
Yeah.
And then it was a real surprise this morning when the plows had a 6-foot bank at the end of my driveway.
The snowblower
died, which was fun.
Thank you for sending that picture, by the way.
Yeah, you like that?
It was really great.
I figured I'd send one picture before I died.
We were all in constant contact with each other, sort of updating
whether we were going to make it to work or not.
We had a group email as to who was going in.
Right? Hey, did you stay over, Joe? Or did you stay over?
Oh no, I drove in this morning.
Whoa! And how was that on the world's longest parking lot?
It was well. You know, I don't come that way, so really great. It was really. This is going to sound like a shot, but it was really great until I got in the city of Albany, where it's a lot harder to move the snow
because there are cars parked.
There's cars parked, and they a lot of the things weren't. I'm coming down Cal Pass mostly on my ride in, and it's they were plowed and clear and once I got out of the driveway, everything was fine.
Yeah.
So
this is great.
Well, I can tell you that I took Murray out, and he was over his head. I mean, he was literally up to the top of him.
Yeah, it was over Brady's head,
like a little rabbit.
It's huge. And they don't know what to do.
So here we are, like we are from Virginia, surprised about 2 feet of snow, and we should just be saying, you know, bah, this is nothing.
That's right. Well, I do want to echo, you know, I think one of the nice things about coming in, driving in this morning, is that there weren't many people on the road, which was nice, which means that people are heeding the warnings that if you don't have to go out, don't go out. And it's letting the crews do their job, which are doing a magnificent job getting everything done. And there's the state crews and the county crews and the city crews and all of those people are out doing their thing. But then what would you say?
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. Very nice.
You were listing all the Cruise, I thought. Right?
Yes, all right. I didn't want to forget that one. Ted Cruz, all that.
Ted Cruz was out shoveling as well this morning. Yeah, that's a good point.
He's been shoveling for a long time.
All right. You know what? Easy now.
We're going to take a break. I just want to read a quick email that I got from one Rosemary Armeo, said...
She's on assignment.
Says, Happy Valentine's Day. Sorry to be absent. sorry to be absent today. I'm listening, though, so don't say anything stupid.
Ah.
Well, maybe too late for that. Yeah. But
thanks for nothing, okay. Rosemary. Thanks for nothing.
I'll try it. Anything stupid.
We'll take a break. And
get
we'll
it?
Hit the. I got it. I got it. Tom Cruise and I are laughing. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to our Valentine's Day blizzard. It's not a blizzard. I don't know what it is. It's a big snowstorm edition of the Roundtable. Flurries. Let's start off with the news of the day. Our senator, Senator Charles Schumer, our senator in New York.
Yeah.
Not your senator if you were in one of the other six states that we broadcast to.
Ohio.
Democrat of New York offered a long shot option on Thursday to revive the moribund effort to overhaul the nation's immigration laws that would require the support of more than a dozen House Republicans. And if nothing else, pressure others to act on an election year issue that Tea Party aligned members strongly oppose. The legislative maneuver known as a discharge petition. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a phrase they used in the weather forecast. Would allow supporters of where'd you think I was going?
I thought you were going in a horrendous direction, and I'm glad you didn't. Continue.
Would allow supporters would allow supporters of overhauling the nation's immigration laws to circumvent the Republican majority in the House by bringing the measure directly to the House floor, bypassing the regular committee process. If only we had a political scientist on the show to describe to us what in the hell a discharge petition is.
Alan,
go.
Well, all it takes is 218 people in the House to sign go up to the Speaker's desk, and there's this discharge petition, and you put your name on it. And if you get 218, it goes to the floor. Now it goes out of committee. The reason this is so important is that the whole House, including a lot of Republicans who do not want to vote against immigration reform, would be forced to sign. It would be an up and down vote. Well, that's the last thing that the Speaker Boehner wants to have happen. I actually was working in Congress as an intern when the Civil Rights Bill came up, and it worked. And in those days, I think it may have changed since then, but in those days, in order to get this thing to work, you had to sign if you were a congressman, but the Speaker didn't tell you how many people had signed. Got it?
Got it.
So you didn't know how many people were on it. So my guy, Frank Thompson, who I work for, and a bunch of other people in the Democratic Study Group, they figured out an ingenious way of making it happen. They held back some people, and at the very end, they had them go up and each memorize 20 people who were on the list. And then they leaked to the New York Times and other newspapers who had said they had signed but hadn't signed. And that pressured them into doing it. The discharge petition worked. The chances of this discharge petition working this time is negligible are negligible. And the reason for that is that Boehner doesn't want it. And this would be a slap in the face for Boehner if Republican congressmen went out and signed that discharge petition. And yet, there will be plenty of people in these districts, if people get sophisticated enough, who will put pressure on them. You know, I think Chuck Schumer is one of the most clever guys ever. After all, this is the guy who invented the shoomage, which he buys at Subway's, and he eats wherever he goes, including at the WAMC studios. But he's very clever. He's able to put this stuff together, and he's going to force people to pay attention to the fact that the Republicans won't let this bill get voted on up or down on the floor. And that is, I think, his major point here, because after all, in the last presidential election, Hispanics voted in overwhelming numbers against Republicans. And if in the 2016 election it's going to happen again, you had better believe that they're going to keep up the pressure on this in the same way they have on shutting down the government and everything else. Is that sufficient, or do you want more?
No, that is great. I was just Rosemary just emailed me and reminded me, and I had forgotten about this, but the discharge petition is what Elle Woods used in Legally Blonde 2.
I'm sorry, with the what now?
Legally Blonde 2?
Elle Woods. She was a...
The Legally Blonde, that movie with Reese Witherspoon. In the second one, Red, White, and Blonde.
All right.
You remember it, right?
No, I don't.
I do. I saw it at least five times.
Let's get to the point.
She used a discharge petition to bring a bill banning cosmetics testing on animals to the floor of the House. If Elle Woods can do it,
maybe Schumer got the idea.
Maybe Schumer.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think your most interesting point is that. So, what do you gain politically, even if it doesn't go forward and you can't do it? What do you gain politically, Alan, by trying to do it?
Well, because it shows every Hispanic in the United States of America who feels passionately about this subject that who's on first, who's opposed to it, and who's for it. And in this case, he's painting a very dire picture of Republican congressmen who won't let the Congress vote on on this pathway. From where I'm sitting, he succeeds. I don't see where they lose anything at all. And I think it's a brilliant masterstroke. In the meantime, it'll keep up the pressure because the press will ask every congressman, did you sign the discharge petition or didn't you?
Right.
And lo be it if they lie, which they did the last time that I was around.
All right. Well, you know, Boehner and his side say, you know, the Senate passed bill is deeply flawed. And Republicans in general have been saying, look, we've got to do something on immigration. Don't you think this is an end around against normal process of working on things? In other words, a bill that they think is not right, but a bill that they would like to work on and get done in a normal fashion. So isn't this just political arm turning?
Well, first of all, Ray, there is not a single piece of evidence that they're doing anything. Boehner said that he thought that we could take it up part at a time. But then the other day he said, not this year. So I think it's disingenuous to say that. Now, if it's flawed, that's why we have conference committees. You remember that if both houses pass it and there are differences in the way they pass it, they go sit around a big round table and they agree or disagree on different things, and out comes the more perfect product that you're alluding to.
Or at least a product that people agree on, whether it's perfect or not. I mean, the thing is...
Well, yeah, what's perfect?
You know, there have been cases where legislation has gone through too fast, it hasn't worked out well, and it has caused a lot of trouble. So, I mean, there is another side that says, hey, listen, we're committed to doing this, but let's do it right. Let's work it out. Don't have somebody in the other organ of Congress twist our arms on this.
Ray. You know, come on. This is so clearly and so transparent an effort not to do immigration reform in the United States, and everybody knows it. Let me ask you a question, Ray. At the point at which they have to stand up in open House of Representatives vote and vote yes or no, why do you think so many Republicans want to kill it this way by not even allowing it to the floor?
Because I think some Republicans genuinely believe, and I think you're right. Your cynical aspect of this can certainly.
What did you say? I'm sorry.
Your cynical look at this
aspect.
Is true to some extent.
Aspect. Yeah.
However, There are some Republicans who legitimately believe that the Senate passed bill is not, is indeed flawed, and it needs to be worked out. So why be forced to vote up or down and take those political consequences if the bill stinks and they can come up with a better one?
I just got through telling you about the conference committee.
Okay.
I just got through telling you about what the conference committee is.
We understand the conference committee, but we're out of time, and you have failed to sway me.
I am so surprised.
At least in that way. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We're going to get a news update from NPR. I believe the lead story will probably be the snow.
Possibly.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. That,
that's a great remake.
That
Hopper.
Is a great Arctic Monkeys.
That is a really nice and
very
true to the original. Wow,
very nicely
Let's
done.
Just play that for the rest of the show.
Love songs, nothing but love songs.
Fine.
Who's the woman? Delilah, right?
She's on a station and she plays love songs and then dishes out advice.
Advice, yeah.
Yeah,
Delilah.
I'm not a listener.
Yeah. Been a radio staple for years.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion this morning in our Snow Laden edition. We would love to have you comment roundtable at WAMC.org. We'd love to hear from you. And Alan Chartok is here. Ray Graff is here.
Yep.
I'm here. And it's and that's about it.
that's all you get, folks.
That's all you get today. Let's go to this story. Apprehensive. Many doctors shift to jobs with salaries. American physicians worried about changes in the healthcare market are streaming into salary jobs with hospitals. Though the shift from private practice has been most pronounced in primary care, specialists are following suit. Last year, 64% of job offers filled through Merritt Hawkins, one of the nation's leading physician placement firms, involved hospital employment, compared with only 11% in 2004. The firm anticipates a rise to 75% in the next 2 years. This is something that is becoming quite pervasive. But these numbers were a little bit higher than I had even expected. And it's an interesting trend, Alan, in how things are going in healthcare.
Yeah, you know, the feds have made this imperative for many people. They want these systems set up so that, you know, there can be saving, there can be more comprehensiveness. I have a lot of doctors who are now taking care of this thing, have done this. I mean, people like Paul Lemansky, who we all know so well from our airwaves, who has been on with us. So what happens is that they get bought by the hospitals. There are major advantages to this, by the way, for the doctors. Some who are afraid of losing money may resist, but there's a certain comfort level in doing it this way. You get a salary. The salaries are not unattractive, but I have to say they're nothing like the percentage of income that a doctor used to make after going to medical school. Doctors don't make the kind of money that they once had. Now, the specialists obviously do better than the general practitioners, which may mean that we're going to have and do have a general practitioner problem. But sooner or later, this is the look of the future. It's going to be virtually everywhere. And in the capital region, it's endemic already.
And what does it mean for hospitals? I mean, hospitals have been in rough shape for a very, very long time. Is this good or bad? Does this help them or not?
We don't know yet. We think it's going to help them.
In what way? On the bottom line?
Yeah, I think on the bottom line, but I think the reason it's going to help them is that they're going to have more control over what's going on, who's ordering what tests, what's, you know, what's happening. I think in the end, the chances are good that hospitals will make out better as a result of this because they will have more control.
Well, and
over
also
the entire system,
and also yeah. they'll have extra fees. Now there is an economist with Brandeis University's Heller School, Robert Mechanic, who's quoted in this New York Times article, and he says, in many places, this will almost certainly lead to more expensive care because the doctors will be working for the hospitals looking for new revenues, and so when you go in for a test, whether it's an endoscopy or whatever, the test performed in the office can suddenly cost more because there is now a facility fee tacked on, and likewise, many doctors on salary are offered bonuses tied to how much billing they can generate. So therefore, there is the potential for pushing more tests. And this has always been a question about whether there are, you know, money is driving unnecessary tests or more tests than necessary. So what this Robert Mechanic says is from the hospital's end, there's a big feeding frenzy and a lot of bidding going on to bring in doctors. So I think they see this as a way to really improve the bottom line.
But also, and then you saw in the insurance companies.
The insurance companies always
make you certainly still have the insurance companies. There are those people who think that, in fact, there will be fewer tests because the hospitals have to pay now for the tests.
Right.
And so, therefore, even if they're their own people, and if they know that it's going to cost them more money, the hospitals now have the ability to control how many tests they're going to be. For all of us who have ever examined I hate to say this because I have so many friends in the medical business, but in the hospital business where they're doing a terrific job around Albany, but I have to say that anybody who's ever seen what they charge for an aspirin when you're in the hospital, your point is, Ray, very well taken.
Well, and as this article points out, the base salary is, and this seems like a lot, but when you compare it to what they would make on their own, I wonder, but the base salaries of physicians.
Or in the old days. Or in the old days. Yeah.
Who become employees are still related to the income that they can generate, ranging from under $200,000 for primary care doctors, $575,000 in cardiology, $663,000 in neurosurgery, according to Becker's Hospital Review, which is a trade publication. So, I don't know where those salaries go, but one of the other things they don't have to pay is malpractice insurance, which then becomes part of the their employees that are part of their office, right?
Yeah, no, and the malpractice thing is a huge incentive to do it. And the other thing is that when you're not having to run the business, you can practice on the medical side without the kind of pressure that I know these guys have. I got to tell you, I have a very good friend who is a GP who makes $150,000 a year. Now, anybody listening to this right now may think that's a lot of money, but not for a doctor, not in the old days, not compared to what other people were making. When your mother borrowed everything to send you to medical school and the rest of it, they thought in the old days that was the golden spoon. That is no longer true. Doctors are getting closer to the Cuban model where doctors get, you know, nothing or very little.
Well, the other thing I wondered in reading this article, because there's a lot about the insurance companies, there's a lot about the doctors, there's a lot about the effect on the bottom line for both the hospitals and for the doctors. But, you know, what about the patients? And it seems to me as someone who has, spent a fair amount of time with my parents and so forth in hospitals and waiting for that doctor who is a specialist to come from their office and to come over and visit, does it do a better service to the patient to have the hospital there or to have the doctor there, to have them affiliated? They're there with the hospital, they have their rounds, they're doing their thing, and they're part of the network. I would think that would be better.
Well, will it cure medical arrogance? That is yet to be seen, and there are other issues, of course.
What's medical arrogance?
There's some, you know, a doctor who thinks that they're floating on the clouds, and that really there are some doctors who don't feel that they have to be nice to patients.
Oh, I see. I
was talking to a patient the other day who goes to who goes to a maternity practice, and you know, there are those doctors who come in at the they're great doctors, of course. Don't get me wrong, who really care about their patients. But then there are those who practice as if they were mechanics in a how you say it, garage. You know.
Well, I think it would be easy to do that after, you know, you've delivered 10,000 babies. I think that it does come, you know,
routine.
It's a job.
Yeah, but they're still doing.
Doing it professionally, and they get it done.
Well, Ray, that's so nice of you to say. But if you were a patient and you had a major disease, a cancer, something like that, you know, for those of us who pick our doctors because they pay attention to us and because they're decent, concerned human beings, of which there are many. Would you rather have that or a guy who just shrugs his shoulders and says, I've seen this before?
I don't know what to say.
Exactly.
Well, no, I mean, that doesn't happen. I mean, doctors are great.
Whoa. You just said it did happen. You just said, you know, that they come in, they go out.
No, but they do it professionally, and it's nothing new to them. But they're still, I've never seen, you know, we've been to a few maternity rooms, and I've never seen one who wasn't professional and courteous. And, what do you want, a bouquet of roses?
That wouldn't hurt.
Well, it is Valentine's Day.
Valentine's Day.
I mean, that's what got us into the mess.
I consider that to be, you know, I don't think that's the level of discussion we want here.
That's fine, Alan. No, listen, whatever discussion level you want, I'm down with.
Uh-oh.
And with that in mind, let's take a break exactly what that level is.
All right.
And we'll
put it up to committee.
We don't know what the level is, but I have an idea we're at orange. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Barry Price Architecture. Since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics, BarryPriceArchitecture.com. And Union Institute and University's Hybrid Master's Counseling Psychology Program, Brattleboro, Vermont, hosting Visiting Day, Saturday, February 15th, from 12 to 2, myunion.edu for registration.
Back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, and myself, and we welcome you as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, and we are talking about a myriad of issues this morning. We move on now to the NSA. The National Security Agency has told Congress that it has forced out a civilian employee after a lengthy investigation to assign accountability for the disclosure of intelligence secrets by Edward Snowden, one of its former contractors. Two others, identified only as an active-duty military member and another contractor, were removed from access to NSA information and facilities last August. But because neither worked directly for the NSA, the agency told the House Judiciary Committee in a letter, any further action would have to be determined by their employers. The letter, first reported by NBC News, was intended to answer congressional queries about who, beyond Mr. Snowden himself, would be held accountable for the security lapses that led to the disclosures. This story comes in the heels of exactly how Edward Snowden was able to access the information that he did, which was with very, I wouldn't say simple software, but nothing overly ambitious, web crawler software. And so... And I would assume, Alan, that this is going to be the NSA is sort of the tip of the iceberg as they try to get to the bottom of this and try to save face here.
Well, I think the second part, rather than get to the bottom of this, is the important part, and that is the saving face. And that is why anybody who was anywhere near this guy, Snowden, or who had anything to do with him, is going to be in bad shape right now. Because obviously there's going to be a certain amount of scapegoating that goes on in this kind of situation every time you have it. You know, I would not want to be that guy, those people, or I would not want to be, you know, in a position where we have seen it before, when things go wrong, you know, you look for somebody to hold accountable, whether they deserve it or not. And there's Snowden sitting in Russia for whatever it's worth, and here are the leftovers, and those are the people who sort of get called and get held in the can.
But this guy, it looks like he does deserve it. Now, according to a letter that came through to the committee that's investigating this, the NSA civilian employee in question admitted to FBI that he allowed Mr. Snowden to use his credentials. I mean, that sounds like an accomplice to me.
Well, you make a point.
Wow. I was waiting for the shoe to drop.
No.
Please put that on the record, will you, that he made a point?
I made a point.
Look, the question is, how many other people have been doing exactly that and have not been held accountable because, you know, they don't have the same need to find, you know, culprits in all of this.
Yeah.
But you do make a point. I mean, rules are rules. I don't want to go into it, but I can say that we have held people accountable for breaking the rules at WMC. You just don't want to do it.
Yes, but you did allow me to use your password that time.
I can't tell you how many times when somebody's been working on. I think not only everybody at WAMC knows my password, but I think the general public knows it also.
No, that is not true, and don't even try out there. And he would be
Okay, here it is.
No, oh, okay, here it is. Don't do it, man. Don't do it.
Here's a hint. Just watch the end of The Crying Game.
Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
All right. So we're done on this? Yes?
Yeah. Well, Rosemary want to weigh in from her warm, comfy house?
She's been weighing in, actually.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, been very nice.
Okay, I did want to say that we heard from a doctor's wife.
Okay, good.
Who wants to be anonymous? Who says? And we're not allowed to use her name.
Okay.
From anonymous and some primary doctors.
And
make
you know
less
why, right? 100,000.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
I know why.
Okay.
And don't give any hints now. Yeah.
What does she say?
And some primary care doctors make less than $100,000. I know that's true, annually, and put in 90 to 100 hours per week. By joining a hospital practice, at least they get benefits and retirement plans. That's right. And then from our very good friend, Roberta Steiner, a large number of docs are leaving private practice because of the headache of managing the business and the practice, something I mentioned earlier. Do you all remember that?
I do remember that, sir. Let it be noted.
We'll roll back the tape to prove it. Sure.
Yeah, staff scheduling, insurance, payroll, utilities, et cetera.
Yeah.
All right. So other issues that we want to discuss this morning as we are quickly running out of time.
Oh, no.
I know. It's a tearjerker.
Wow. Where does it go?
Yeah, I know. Turn around and they're three. Turn around and they're four. And soon enough, the show's
Where
over.
Where is the little girl now?
Yes. Shoveling.
So we're
the worst wedding I ever went to. Not that this is appropriate,
all right,
but the worst wedding I ever went to, it was in a place in the Bronx, and they rolled up Venetian blinds, and there was the bride, and she was going around in a circle, like a mechanical thing. It was going around, and out came a soprano of some, you know, weight, and who sang "Where Is the Little Girl Now?" I just thought I'd mention that.
Wow, that's surreal. That's terrific.
I'm sorry, I just have to ask, and I don't know why, but just out of curiosity, was this during the actual wedding ceremony or during the...
Yeah. No, right as the bride came in.
Wow.
The first glimpse of the bride was in the alcove with the Venetian blind up.
Wow.
Wow, that's...
Weddings by Fellini. It was quite a thing back then.
Quite a production number there.
Very good.
Choreographed. All right. So let us. You know, we were talking about the Olympics earlier this week. Maybe it was yesterday. I've sort of lost track. But that the American athletes were having some troubles, and
you were wrong.
And certainly had a good. I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay.
But they had a good day yesterday. And while we are very busy shoveling out, they have all of these pictures. And a great shot in the Times this morning. Of people basically just sunbathing.
Yeah,
it's very warm, incredibly warm. It's the Winter Olympics is really melting. It is a heat wave in Sochi, and spectators are sunbathing, and if they're wearing shirts at all. They're sleeveless and shorts and the whole thing, and there they go, which of course is making many Olympians reconsider what to wear for their warm weather winter sports.
Cross country people were not, I mean, they were wearing basically t-shirts for that long cross country ski, and it's fairly rare to see that.
Yeah, and those big silver coats they have, those big puffy coats.
Yeah.
They don't really need those because it's so warm. But obviously, in a more serious note, it is having an effect on the conditions for all of the athletes, and safety continues to be a concern. And it's interesting to watch as these Olympics become the slushy Olympics.
Did you watch the skeleton last night?
Yeah.
What would possess anyone to try getting on a sled, put your arms behind your back, and go head first down a track at 80 miles an hour? How do you practice that, and how do you live? We sat in awe last night as these women went down the track. It was very exciting.
Whoa.
My wife had to turn away at times. She was scared. That's all right.
Yeah. I just was wondering how much sushi is in Sochi with all that heat. You know, the fish goes bad.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Sushi, Sochi.
Sushi, Sochi.
He'll be here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
please tip your server. All right, and we'll end on this. It is Valentine's Day. We should note that it is Valentine's Day, and hopefully the weather will not alter people's plans too drastically if they're.
One.
I just have to remind Ray that he's on television.
Oh, whoops.
I'm sorry. I just apologize.
All right. I'm sorry to everyone.
Were you doing a Seinfeld?
I'm sorry to everyone watching.
Wow.
Did you get caught?
No, I don't know. I don't know that he got caught necessarily, but just wanted to make sure that he didn't.
So anyway, your Valentine's plans.
Well, yeah. Hopefully they're not impacted. And I don't know. Anybody have any thoughts about Valentine's Day and the idea of Valentine's Day?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
Go.
I bought
we have one minute.
I bought Roselle. A couple of years ago, I bought her a card that was so big and so obnoxious that she still remembers
it. I remember that.
And one time.
You brought it in here first. Yeah. And, showed it off.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. It was bigger than I am.
Yeah.
And then you want to say something?
No.
And then also, I bought her the biggest box of drugstore candy that you have ever seen made into a heart. And she was really angry.
So did you do it out of love or did you know that it would make her angry?
Aha.
Second.
Aha!
It's a lovely,
and out of love.
That's a lovely way to
celebrate. Happy Valentine's Day, you old softy.
St. Valentine's Day. All right. Thank you very much for joining us.
He got killed.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you very much for being with us. Ray, thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Very much.
Drive safely, everybody.
Alan, thank you. And we'll continue with the Roundtable program after this short break.